upward inflection and downward inflection. Now you're going to need to do it opposite of what you think. And I'll give you an example. We're on a coaching call from a previous training a couple of months ago, and someone is really pushing back against one of the things that we said will work. Now what you guys are going to find is we'll tell you it works, and you're going to sit there and you go like, okay. And a little bit later when we ask you to do it, you'll say, I can't do that. That's not going to work. So when you do that, it's my gut instinct to say to you, so when I told you before that it worked, you thought I was wrong. Now that's downward inflection. And what's my tone of voice telling you that I'm thinking about you at that time? That tone of voice is saying, you're an idiot. So instead, I say it, so when I told you before that it worked, you thought I was wrong? Now, that felt completely differently, right? And that's how your tone of voice can go from an accusation to, in a way, it's thought-provoking. And my tone of voice a second time will cause you to actually think about it. And I got the reaction that I wanted from the person we were coaching. They went, oh, no. Because I knew that my tone of voice was going to have their impact on their ability to process the information. And that's a mastery move. When you want to inflect down, when you really want to, it's probably you should inflect up. Because you're creating thoughts, as Brandon says over and over again, you're creating emotional moments in the other side. Most of those emotional moments that you're creating is you're trying to get people to think about stuff in a positive and constructive way. You're trying to get them to rethink in a positive and constructive way. You're trying to point out when you think they're wrong. And especially when you think they're wrong, that's when your tone is gonna kill you. And you're gonna wanna switch it up. And that's where the mastery comes in. And with practice, you'll get it. But without practice, you won't get it. And I don't know how many of you noticed, but in the prep session with each one of the volunteers, I'm really working hard at an encouraging tone of voice. And I don't know if anybody was looking at my prep then, but these three people are walking in front of a room full of people expecting to get barbecued. Their brain is probably already shutting down, and that is the last thing that collectively as an instructional team that we need. And my team is relying on me to do as much as I can to get the three volunteers on point because they are getting ready to get punched right in the face. So my tone in each one of those briefing sessions was very specific to be encouraging and upward inflecting and non-threatening because I need them thinking and working with me. And it was all tonality. We were showing you tone before we even got into the exercise. But those are the two quick issues. If you want to inflect down, there's a pretty good chance you should inflect up. Just practice it a few times and you'll get it. Get your reps in.
As reminders, be very aware of your tone. The most well-executed skill delivered with poor tone. I don't know, Sandy, if you were to put a percentage on it, and I realize I'm dropping, you know, dropping this on your head. I didn't prepare you for it. I'm catching you off guard. If you were going to put a percentage to it about how much a well-executed skill would be negatively affected by poor tone of voice, if you're just going to guess, right? Not something I'm necessarily going to hold you to, but I know you have a great feel for this stuff. with the background that you have as a crisis negotiator, what would you say?
Well, to me, tone is the most important thing. So if your tone is wrong, no matter what you're saying, the person is going to take it the way they perceive it. So you've lost complete control if your tone is bad. So I would say it's up there really high, 90%, if not higher. Tone is extremely important.
Yeah, 90%. Wow, that's a pretty big percentage. So you're only 10% effective if the tone of voice doesn't come with it.
That's just amazing. It could be higher. Tone is important. Tone means everything. Tone is the first thing that someone notices about you. So if your tone is comes across as negative, the rest of your interaction, unless you can fix that tone right away, is going to remain negative. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's a great point. And negative covers, it's such a broad stroke of the brush, right? Because negative could be you come off as arrogant, or you come off as, right? And I think we've all done this at certain times where we deliver things with a tone of voice that says, I think that you're stupid, or I think that, you know, your opinion holds no water. And all of that comes across in our tone and what perceived intention might be from the other side. Something that always blew my mind, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of Derek Gaunt, and I may have mentioned this last time, and this is just a reiteration, but it really blows me away. One of the things he told me early on was when he was in crisis negotiation and he had to choose to put some money on the phone. And if his choices were somebody that was fully versed in the skills and understood all of the intricacies inside and out of all the skills, very well versed, but their tone of voice was really bad. And then the other choice was somebody that doesn't really know the skills at all and still has a lot to learn. However, this person has a fantastic tone of voice. Like, if he had to choose between those two people, what would he choose? And to my surprise, he said he'd always choose the person with the tone of voice, because if their tone of voice is extremely accurate and on point and executed well, he knew that in a crisis negotiation scenario, they would always come to resolution. It might take a while, but the chances of them coming to resolution were almost, you know, they're up there at 94% close rate. And then the person that had great skills, but their tone was always off, is a really good chance things are going to go bad. And I always thought that was a really interesting perspective. How can you be so good at the skills and then a skill expert doesn't want to use you just simply because of the tone of voice? And I always thought that was amazing. So things to keep in mind.
We have a question that just came up in the chat. It says,
yes,
how do you evaluate your own tone?
That's a great question. And so a few things, a couple of them will be reiterations from last time. The first part is always assume that you have something to learn when you go into a negotiation. A lot of us get off point because we assume we're going in because we got to educate the other side. We got to lay out the data, facts, justifications. We need them to understand, so we have to explain it to them. And our intention is to go in to teach and inform and educate. And it actually needs to be switched to, we go in knowing that we have things to learn. And that's why we're at the table. And so that's the first part, because that mindset leads to genuine curiosity. If we stay in a mindset of genuinely curious, it'll come across in our tone. You can hear the question mark at the end. And so that's one piece of it. Another piece of it is we all have our triggers in the moment. We all know when we feel ourselves getting cranked up. Could be for any number of reasons. When you feel that coming on, that should be a trigger for yourself internally that you just need to go ahead and switch into the late night FM DJ voice. When you feel that bubbling up inside of you, just focus on slowing down your cadence, and that'll help you keep in control.
Other techniques in dealing with the cutthroat negotiator. late night FM DJ voice. Conquer their tone of voice with yours. The late night FM DJ voice is a deliberate cadence reduction in your delivery. It's downward inflecting. There are people who say mirror neurons don't exist, but it hasn't been borne out scientifically for me yet, because I've seen the impact that one's voice can have on a counterpart. The cutthroat negotiator, the assertive negotiator, is domineering, bullying in their delivery. Fastest way to mitigate that is check your own tone. You guys have all seen or done the 60 seconds or she dies exercise. You know for a fact, because you've seen it, whomever is playing the role of the hostage taker in that event can dial people up or dial them back just by their tone of voice. And we have seen it time and again, going into the late night FM DJ voice, the analyst voice reduces, slows down the brain, reduces the negatives and slows the brain down of the person on whom the voice is used. The late night FM DJ voice is simply slowing your cadence down, making exaggerated attempts at pronouncing every syllable in every word. Slows the other side down. And what else? Dynamic silence. The cutthroat negotiator likes to dominate the conversation. The more you shut your mouth, the more they're going to talk. Very effective. Very effective in getting them to provide you with the information that you're going to need to move the needle.
Yeah. Hey, Sandy. Thank you, Chris and Shay and Kayla, for having us today. I am wondering if you can shed some light, Sandy, on, as a woman in the workplace, I found that a lot of times if there's a tough situation and your tone stays good, but you're still dealing with in a tough manner, that as a woman you can come across and really be labeled as being bitchy, right, instead of just tough, where a guy with the same tone in the same situation would just be, you know, everybody would just say, hey, he did a great job, you know, he took authority or whatever. And I'm just wondering if you have any recommendations on how to avoid that label and still come across well.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I actually hear this quite often. Women say something that when it comes out of their mouths, for whatever reason, it seems more assertive. But when a man says it, it seems to be taken okay. If you're controlling your tone, which it sounds like you're doing a good job of controlling the tone, a lot of times it's the structure that you're using. With the skill that you're using, make sure you're using the right structure. So if you're using a label, if you're trying to find out information, instead of asking a direct question, use that label with a nice tone. It might get you a little bit further. If you're having the overall problem, say, in a meeting or in a negotiation or in a tough conversation, try using an accusations audit first and mitigate that negative. You can say, you're probably going to think what I'm saying is very assertive. Pause for a few seconds, and then say what you're going to say. Because if you put out there, they may think you're being assertive. You're demonstrating that you understand that they have that thought process going on in their mind. And when you do that, you mitigate it. You clear it from their mind. So they can't come back in a few minutes and say you're being too assertive or you're being bitchy, because you pretty much told them up front you thought they were going to think that anyway. So it mitigates that thought, keeps them from using that against you later in the conversation. So a lot of women that I've spoken with have had this issue. And when I suggested to use the accusations audit before they speak, it actually gave them a little bit of a leg up, and they found that people were not considering them quite as assertive because they were putting it out there first.
Thank you. That was really helpful. I do have one other question, if it's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is your biggest recommendation for helping with times when you have tone issues?
Okay, tone. tone is something that you deal with from the day you're born, I think. I remember when I was younger, my mom saying, watch your tone of voice. And I would think, I don't have a tone. And when I look back on it now, I'm thinking to myself, oh, I so had a tone. When I was that teenager, I definitely had a tone. So trying to get a hold of your tone of voice is something that takes a little bit of practice, especially if you're trying to go into that late night FM DJ voice, especially if you've listened to Chris do the voice on the masterclass, because the tone of Chris's voice, when he goes down to the late night FM DJ voice, it has a whispery quality to it. And as a woman, you want to avoid that whispery quality. It sends the wrong message. So instead, what you need to concentrate on is kind of practicing with your diaphragm. And especially when you're in a stressful situation, because if you sit up straight and you elongate your diaphragm and you tilt your chin up just a little bit, your voice tends to get a little bit higher. And I'm doing it right now as we talk, if you can tell, your voice gets a little bit higher. So when you want to go down into that late night FM DJ voice, you want to shrink down into your stomach a little bit and lower your chin, and your voice is naturally going to drop a few octaves. And if you notice, that's what I just did. So to get into that late night FM DJ voice, drop your chin, let your body fall down relaxed, and then slow down your rate of speech. And that's the way you're actually going to get to the late night FM DJ voice that is an appropriate place for women to be with it. Now, if while you're doing this late night FM DJ voice, you get triggered a little bit, you just have to remember to maybe tighten your core, because if you tighten your core, your abdominal muscles, it'll keep you hunched forward just a little bit, which will help you control that tone and keep it down in a lower octave.
Here's another tip on emails. Do emails have tone? Remember, the tone that it's going to be read in is not the tone that was in your head when you wrote it. You'll write an email with this wonderful, loving, soft, nice, positive, upbeat, nurturing tone, and it's not going to be read that way. It's probably going to be read in, at best, a cold and distant tone, and potentially, at worst, as a harsh tone. I once sent an email where somebody asked me a question, the answer was no. And I wrote, no, because I heard in my head that I was going to say it soft and gentle, like that. Well, you send a one line, one word email, no, when you mean no. The other side's going to hear, no! Here's some more great advice on how to think about tone in an email.
Do emails have tone? They can, they got a no, we got some yeses, and we got a always do. Yeah, that's more, we got a maybe over here, right? I think you were just trying to be funny. Emails always have a tone, and they always take on the tone of the mood that the reader is in at the time, which as a negotiator, you have no control over. The fact that they got up that morning, their kid got in trouble, they had to give their kid a spanking, and then their wife yelled at them, and then they got into an argument with their boss, then they sat down at the computer and read your email, and they're really pissed off in that moment, you had no control over that. And so, when it comes to email, it's not so much that these can't be used, but we like to drop in what we refer to as email softeners, which simply put are just I'm sorry's and I'm afraid's. And then our emails have always got to be short. You know, the other thing, and that's why you said it's tricky, because number one, emails got to be short, and sometimes your accusations are that there's 17 items. You might not necessarily want to list all 17 in the email, but you might want to use the email to drive them to the table so you can lay them out verbally. And then the second thing, as I mentioned earlier, is the tone. And the way you combat that is when I'm sorry, I'm afraid. No matter what mood you're in, I'm sorry pretty much always reads as I'm sorry. And so, I'm sorry I have to lay this at your feet. I'm afraid if this doesn't get solved, it's going to cause this problem. You probably think this is some sort of a money grab. You know, in an order like that. But you definitely want to drop in your I'm sorry as I'm afraid. I think Getting More. Who wrote the, I can't think of the author. Stuart Diamond. Yes, Stuart Diamond, Wharton professor, taught negotiation there for a long time. He's got a great podcast on sending emails. And he says, write them out and then read them back to yourself out loud in the worst possible voice you could imagine. And he says, don't be one of these people that's like, I can hear the voice in my head. I can just read the words. No. Read it out loud, because the process of hearing the words come out of your mouth and back into your ears is very important. And then rewrite your email. Do emails have tone? They can. They got a no. We got some yeses. And we got to always do. Yeah, that's more. We got a maybe over here, right? I think you were just trying to be funny. Emails always have a tone. And they always take on the tone of the mood that the reader is in at the time, which as a negotiator, you have no control over. The fact that they got up that morning, their kid got in trouble, they had to give their kid a spanking, and then their wife yelled at them, and then they got into an argument with their boss, then they sat down at the computer and read your email, and they're really pissed off in that moment. You had no control over that. And so when it comes to email, it's not so much that these can't be used, but we like to drop in what we refer to as email softeners, which simply put are just I'm sorry's and I'm afraid's. And then our emails have always got to be short. You know, the other thing, and that's why I said it's tricky, because number one, the email's got to be short, and sometimes your accusations are that there's 17 items. You might not necessarily want to list all 17 in the email, but you might want to use the email to drive them to the table so you can lay them out verbally. And then the second thing, as I mentioned earlier, is the tone. And the way you combat that is when I'm sorry, I'm afraid. No matter what mood you're in, I'm sorry pretty much always reads as I'm sorry. And so, I'm sorry I have to lay this at your feet. I'm afraid if this doesn't get solved, it's going to cause this problem. You probably think this is some sort of a money grab. You know, in an order like that. But you definitely want to drop in your I'm sorry as I'm afraid. I think Getting More? Who wrote the, I can't think of the author. Stuart Diamond, yes. Stuart Diamond, Wharton professor, taught negotiation there for a long time. He's got a great podcast on sending emails, and he says, write them out and then read them back to yourself out loud in the worst possible voice you could imagine. And he says, don't be one of these people that's like, I can hear the voice in my head. I can just read the words. No. Read it out loud, because the process of hearing the words come out of your mouth and back into your ears is very important. And then rewrite your email.
And I want to talk about tone for a second. How should we pay attention to our tone, and how important is it when we're communicating?
You know, well, the cool thing about all these skills is that as soon as you start paying attention to them for yourself, you feel better. And the other person feels better too. I mean, you know, I've always implemented this tactically to calm the other side down, make the other side feel better. But it works for me too. And even, you know, the infamous late night FM DJ voice. Like when I use that, it smooths me out too. I mean, there've been a couple of times recently that you know, I think a fair amount of people know that, yeah, my mother died just before Easter, and I can remember getting very emotional in that time period. Also, you know, at her funeral, and just to gain control of my own emotions, I would intentionally move over into that downward inflecting, calming, soothing voice, and I found that it helped me get a grasp on my own emotions to keep from going down the tubes in any particular negative fashion. So as much as this does for the other people that you interact with, and it does a lot for them, it does more for you too. So, you know, it's their benefit is almost the fringe benefit. It helps you level out, and it helps you keep on a more even keel.
Hi, Nicole. How are you? Hi, Chris. Oh, I didn't have a question. I was just back channeling with Ronan, and I'm a voice actor, and I absolutely adore you, Chris. I think you have probably helped so many more people than you even know. And I love what you have to say about tones of voice and mirroring and the playful kind of accommodator voice and the analyst and the late night DJ. That really works. It worked earlier. I heard you. So that's just my two cents. If you ever want to practice anything or just, you know, show people what that might sound like, I'm here for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chris, you know the FM radio DJ voice excites this audience. If you want to give it to them at any point, I mean, I'm not going to stop you.
Well, I would never want to blatantly do that.
Oh my God. How does it work, and when would you use it? I can ask that question.
You know, all right, how it works is it actually triggers a neurochemical response in your brain. It has a calming influence on people, a slowing down influence. You know, they taught us that. I learned it first on the suicide hotline and then as a hostage negotiator. The mechanisms specifically are still in dispute because so much of the brain, exactly how the brain works. Like, for example, I used to say it was mirror neurons. I was triggering your mirror neurons, and it was causing an involuntary response, sort of the way the doctor, you know, hits your knee with a little hammer, and there's a neurological response. And, I mentioned Andrew Huberman. I love listening to Andrew's podcast, and I'm listening to him the other day, and he's going, I got news for all you people out there. There's no such thing as mirror neurons. Neuroscience is, yeah. There's no mirror neurons. But then he says, but there is emotional resonance circuitry, and we don't know exactly what it is, but we know it works. And I'm like, all right, so the effect is the same. You just can't tell me what, you know, how it works. But I know that, you know, your emotional resonance circuitry, I can make you feel calm. I can make you feel my confidence. Calm is contagious. Also, if I smile, then I can trigger you to smile too. And that's going to have a different emotional effect on you. And then if I could put the two of them together, you know, you can have some great conversations and have great interactions. I'm not threatening. I'm on your side. And it does me no. It might do me good short term to threaten you, but it never does me good long term. So this is about long term relationships.
If I've got hostages and I call you and I say, "Listen, I want a car. I think I saw this one on your YouTube channel. I want a car in 60 seconds outside."
Right.
What's the first thing you say to me?
You want to try?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
So I'm the.
You're the bad guy.
I'm the bad guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Chris, I'm going to blow this woman's head off if you don't give me a car in the next 60 seconds.
How am I supposed to do that?
Not my problem. You got 55 seconds.
All right, so if I wanted to do it, it's madness out here. It's chaos. I mean, this is Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey Circus is organized compared to the nonsense that's going on out there. So even if I wanted to do it, I can't do it in that time frame.
I'm sure you're the FBI, you're the police. You can make anything happen. 50 seconds.
Sounds to me like you're not going to give me a chance.
I'm giving you a chance right now. 50 seconds, Chris. There's plenty of cars out there. Go get one of the cars and pull it up outside or I'm going to blow her head off.
Sounds like you have a reason to live.
I do have a reason to live. But that's none of your business.
No, I'm not trying to find out why. I mean, my first number one thing is to make sure that you live.
So get me a car and I will drive off. Honestly, you've got 45 seconds. I don't want to talk anymore.
If you're not going to give me a chance, how am I supposed to do it?
I'm giving you a chance. 45 seconds. That's plenty of a chance.
Like, to me, even get all the commanders together and get them to think about this, which they're probably not going to do anyway. I will go and talk to them. But how am I supposed to find them all, talk to them, get them to think about it in 45 seconds?
Okay, how long do you need?
All right, now, first of all, I want you to understand, I don't think they're going to do it.
Well, then I'm going to blow her head off.
That would be your choice. See, now, so the other thing, too, is hostage negotiators are successful 93% of the time, which is one of the things that I learned in the business, which means 7% of the time they just ain't coming out. Now, we have to do everything we can possibly do in the meantime, but our number one goal is not putting any additional people at risk. Like, I get this question all the time. Like, if you think it's going to save a hostage, why don't you just give him a car and save those hostages? Well, I can't put additional people at risk. And by the way, while we were doing that, I don't know anybody put a clock on us, but we went more than 45 seconds.
It's true.
And what were you thinking as we were going through it?
All the questions were provoking me into all the questions you asked me felt like they were dragging me away from my objective in a quite a tactical way. So I was thinking, this is annoying. He's making me talk and I don't want to talk. That's kind of what I was thinking. And then, the questions you asked were making me ponder and they were making me abandon my focus, which was to just get this car and kill this woman.
Right. See, which was, I wasn't asking you that stuff to get you to answer. What I was really doing was doing exactly what you talked about, get you to ponder, get you to think. You know, what Kahneman has talked about in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, pondering he would call slow thinking, in-depth thinking, where you really think about stuff. And then you really make the decision and you really make up your mind instead of me trying to hustle you. Like, I could hustle you into something really quick, but it wouldn't be your decision. And the whole point of getting somebody to ponder something is so that when they do come to a decision, they own it.
When you said the thing about, even if I wanted to do that, like I couldn't do that in 45 seconds or whatever, I liked that sentence because there was a degree of empathy there. So even if I wanted to, it wasn't, shitting on my parade. It wasn't attacking me too much. And you made me ponder the reality of the fact that it's not even possible. My demand is not even possible, even if you were on my side. So that was a very good question to make me ponder myself to realize that what I'm asking for is not going to happen.
See, and there's another reason why I said it like that too. Because, a lot of people, if you ask for something in a business deal that they're not going to give you, they give you the classic American lie, I'll try.
Mm.
Maybe it's not an American lie, maybe it's a lie in the English language.
Mm.
Like, but in any kind of deal, if somebody looks at you and says, I'll try, you don't get a good feeling.
No.
And you get I'll try enough times, right away it ain't never happening.
Yeah.
So I didn't do I'll try. I basically said, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'll check. Because I'm trying to shift us out of an adversarial into a collaborative conversation. And so then what I'm basically saying is, like, I don't want to mislead you. I don't think this is going to happen. I will be your advocate.
How important is that collaboration?
No relationship survives long term without collaboration. Just ain't going to happen.
So you're giving me the impression that you're actually on my side to some degree and that we're collaborating to find an outcome together.
Yeah, and in point of fact, see, the crazy thing is hostage negotiators have repeat customers. If I get you out alive, the chances of you straightening out your life are not great. And the chances of you ending up in another hostage siege are high if you don't get killed otherwise. And you got to have a memory of the last hostage negotiator trying to work with you versus the guy hustled you and lied to you, guy or gal. So if you always look at all interactions as if you're going to have to pay for everything you said eventually, which means if you lie, you're going to pay for it. If you did everything you could to be collaborative, then your counterpart's going to remember that in the future. Like, well, it didn't go my way, but at least the guy didn't lie to me.
It's like karma, isn't it?
It's karma. 1,000% it's karma. I'm a big believer in karma, very much.
I had a few words to say about one of my sponsors on this podcast. As the seasons have begun to change, so has my diet. And right now, I'm just going to be completely honest with you. I'm starting to think a lot about slimming down a little bit because over the last couple of, probably the last 4 or 5 months, my diet has been pretty bad. And it started to show a little bit. Really, over the last 2 months, I go to the gym about 80% of the time. So I track it with 10 of my friends in a WhatsApp group and this tracker online that we all use together. We call it Fitness Blockchain. And I'm currently at 81%. So 81% of the days I've done a workout in the last 150 days, right? So I'm going to the gym about 6 times a week. That's been a little bit impacted by the Diary of a CEO Live tour, but I'm trying to stick to it. And so one of the things I'm doing now to reduce my calorie intake and trying to get back to being nutritionally complete in all I eat is I'm having the Huel protein shake. Thank you, Huel, for making a product that I actually like. The salted caramel is my favorite. I've got the banana one here, which is the one my girlfriend likes. But for me, salted caramel is the one. How important is it generally in negotiations to listen? Because a lot of people, you know, kind of think they can overpower someone with
right.
just talking at them.
Right. Yeah. And what they're called is they can't hold a job.
Yeah.
You know, you and there are a lot of people that are very visible that are doing that. And in the moment they might look very good. But what ends up happening is they're frequently initially extremely successful. And then their success rates drop off a cliff. And then they don't hold a job because they were awesome in their first quarter and had a continuing steady decline in their productivity till it went to zero and they can't be tolerated anymore. But everybody sees a really loud guy or gal getting deals and they're the ones that make the most noise about it. So your original question is how as important as listening. There is no negotiation methodology that doesn't list listening as an advanced skill. No matter what school of thought somebody's in negotiation, they all list listening as advanced. Far more difficult than simply keeping quiet. It's critical. And you will actually end up increasing the velocity of your deal cycles by listening. Which a lot of people think it's really counterintuitive. But, you know, I did an interview with Mark Cuban 6 or 7 months ago, and I talked about listening. And he's like, yeah, you know, if I take the time to really hear somebody out in our first deal and pay attention to what's important with them, then every deal after that will come to me faster, having done it right up front. And it'll increase the velocity of my ability to make deals with them because they'll trust me. They'll know that I hear them out. They know that I'm looking out for them. And consequently, you know, it doesn't take me a long time to establish trust. And we come back, we come to the table, we get right down to it. And it really increases the velocity of my ability to make deals. And a lot of people can't see that because I got to hear them out. I got to, you know, blah, blah, blah. I got to find out what their point of view is. It seems highly efficient. But what it is incredibly efficient long term.
And then as it relates to speaking, when you were talking to me then in our little dummy negotiation, I noticed the tone of voice you took was very, very calm. You list in the book 3 different voices available to negotiators.
Right.
Give me a flavor of those 3 voices that are available to negotiators.
Well, there's 3 natural types in humans. Fight, flight, or make friends. And these are the our caveman ancestors that lived, either fought the saber-toothed tiger, ran from the saber-toothed tiger, or figured out a way to make friends with it. And the indecisive caveman got eaten by the saber-toothed tiger, doesn't have any descendants. And we've got substantive reason to believe that that exists globally, regardless of gender, ethnicity, religion. The 3 types, the globe's splitting pretty evenly into thirds. Got a lot of data on it. Backs it up. Our brothers and sisters at Harvard pretty much agree based on their experience. Wharton has pulled a lot of the same data, comes very, very close to the same. And each type has a voice, you know, and the voice of the assertive, natural born assertive, which I'm actually a natural born assertive, is more the Donald Trump style negotiator, you know, attacking, blunt, direct. You know, Ivanka Trump once described her dad, Donald, and said, you know, he's not blunt, he's just direct. Well, he's just an example. But, you know, what I think is direct, you feel like you got hit in the face with a brick, which is always counterproductive long term. Always, always, always long term counterproductive. Inhibits your ability to make deals. People get tired of getting hit in the face with a brick. So it wears them out. Then there's the very analytical type, which was, you know, that soothing, calming voice that I was using. Triggers a neurochemical response in you, it actually calms you down neurochemically. It's an involuntary automatic response. Now, you can fight it, you can fight your way back out of it, but you can't stop me from getting the calming neurochemicals started in your head. And, you know, with if you're careful not to seem either cold or condescending, that tone of voice is what the great TV interviewers use, the great news anchors, because there's a lot of there's confidence and calm simultaneously, and people really like it. And then there's, you know, there's a smiling voice, a friendly voice, and somebody just smiles when they speak. That triggers a different neurochemical reaction. The people that you automatically like right away, as soon as you lay eyes on them, as soon as they start speaking. You know, and there's an advantage to that. So I was using, in an emotional situation, and if you're in an emotional negotiation, you know, you want to go with the soothing voice and smile, sprinkle that in, and now you kind of you get the combination of both of them, and it's collaboration. You're going to want to collaborate with me if I use that voice.
I guess it's an attempt, and as you say, to like pacify them. The other thing that in chapter 3 of your book you talk about is.
By the way, you got a pretty good voice.
I mean,
you're basically downward inflecting. Your voice portrays, first of all, it's very genuine, but it portrays a guy who's actually really thinking about what he says, and he actually listens.
Oh, that's a very kind compliment. Thank you. But she's still going to die. In chapter 3, you talk about...
I would love for you to speak about the late night DJ and how to de-escalate conflict.
The late night FM DJ voice, I mean, it has an impact. I mean, it works. You know, we did it in hostage negotiation when the other side was already out of control, and we thought it just worked with hostages or hostage takers. And then I remember while I was still at the FBI, we had a hypnotherapist in the room, and all this is, of course, before neuroscience. And he walks up to me after I spent a lot of time talking about the voice, and he said, "That's the first voice that they taught us in hypnotherapy training." So I'm like, "All right, cool. I'm on the right track. I know exactly why it works. I don't actually care why it works. I just know it does." And then we apply it across the board with people we're interacting with. When somebody's upset, it's the first move to go to. I'm going to want to smile after I've slowed their brain down and calmed them down without making them feel threatened or backed into a corner or condescended to. You know, it's subtle little 2-millimeter switches in a voice. But then I'm going to want to smile because I'm going to want to pick them back up. You know, Sean Acker, Harvard psychologist, the Happiness Advantage, TED Talk, my source of data, he says you're 31% smarter in a positive frame of mind. I want you to be smarter. I want you to collaborate with me. So I'm gonna go from the late night FM DJ voice to the smiling, engaged voice, you know, the voice of actual genuine positive regard, because I genuinely have regard for you. And then one of the things that I talked about earlier, but I love saying again, you know, this stuff does me good too. And recently when I was going through, you know, dealing with my mother's passing. I spoke at her funeral. I told jokes at her funeral, you know, my favorite joke, which was true. You know, what's the difference between my mom and a terrorist? You can negotiate with a terrorist. I mean, my mother was a tough, no-nonsense, meant what she said kind of woman who inspired me in so many different ways. And then when I was speaking at her at her funeral, I mean, I started to get choked up, and I switched into the late night FM DJ voice just to get my own emotions under control. So, you know, this stuff does more for you than it does for the other person, and it does a lot for the other person. So there's a lot of reasons to use the voices of great collaboration in your negotiation. It's good for both people.
Yeah, Chris, that's so helpful. It seems like it's a lot about the nervous system. Like calming the nervous system?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, leveling it out. I mean, deactivating the amygdala, you know, the portions of the amygdala, which is 75% of that little almond-sized organ in the center of your brain, 75% of that baby is dedicated to negative thoughts. So as much of it as you can deactivate and smooth out and pull out of the equation, then more nuanced, more intelligent thinking gets kicked into gear.
Thank you.
Yeah, how you doing, Matthew?
I'm doing good, Troy. This is really exciting. I'm glad to be here. So, hey, question is, can you give an example of the late night DJ voice?
Have y'all been listening to Chris Voss? It's funny. I used to be a DJ actually. And you want to lower your voice. You want to slow down your cadence. You want to be more direct in the way you talk. When you're using the late night DJ voice, that's normally about 20% of your conversation. That's when you want to use that voice, especially when you're going to put out an ask, or if you're going to deliver bad news. You want the person's undivided attention. So you slow down your cadence. You get your point across. And you'll get the person's undivided attention when you're doing it.
And Troy, there's a couple things there that you got to be careful about that I noticed when you executed that you were really careful about. What are some of those things?
Some of the things that you have to be careful about is, that's a good question, Chris. You want to share them with us? Because you're the expert at that part of it. I between you and Derek, your voices are so 20% of the time that I can't get over how y'all run the gamut with that.
Well, you know, for me, it's, you know, I try to make sure that it's soft. You know, there's a couple of fine lines there. You know, I know we like to say your inner voice betrays your outer voice. You don't want to sound angry. You don't want to sound condescending. You know, there's just a couple things, and when I'm doing the late night FM DJ voice, like, my intention, what I want them to feel is calm. And if I'm trying to project calm into it, that's personally what works for me.
That's a good point. Really good point. And that DJ voice actually does that for a lot of people. It calms them down. We were actually on a training with a group that had been Black Swan trained, and they decided to start their own little training session, and they asked if I would sit in on it. And that was one of the first things that happened. The people in the group were so excited about using the skills that they asked me a question about labels and mirrors. And at the time, I didn't even realize that I was using the late night DJ voice. But I calmed down, I slowed down, and one of the people actually said, "You don't realize how much calmer you made us feel just by saying things the way you said it." we've been doing these skills long enough that, and we practice them all the time, that it starts to become second nature. It's our way of thinking and our way of doing business now. So sometimes I forget that I'm actually using that skill.
That's nice. Awesome, guys.
Matthew, thanks for the question, man. That was a good question.
Thanks, Matthew.
In this video, Derek's going to talk about labeling and mirroring, but the video is also about the infamous late night FM DJ voice and inflection. Now, the key to this is the fact that Derek is a natural at the late night FM DJ voice. So as you listen to this, take in Derek's tone of voice and feel how it is. People find him reassuring.
The common theme with labels and mirrors is what? What do you think the common theme is?
Get more information out of your throat.
That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get more information. But the common theme is I'm taking what you give me, I'm repackaging it, and I'm giving it right back to you. By labeling and mirroring, am I convincing him to move in a certain direction with my words or with his own? That in effect removes you as a threat in the conversation, because as long as you remain a threat, no meaningful dialogue is ever going to take place. When people push back against your ask, when they offer resistance, when they tell you no, when they issue a threat or a demand accompanying a threat, what they're telling you is, I'm afraid of something, or I don't trust you. Labels and mirrors remove you as a threat. The mirrors are so powerful because you don't even have to think. You get stuck, you don't know where to go in the negotiation. All you gotta do is do what she did and remember something about the conversation and repeat it back to them. Repackaging exactly what they give you, giving it back to them, removes you as a threat. And that, from that point on, more meaningful dialogue can take place. He mentioned something about the inflection upwards or downwards. So when I say she doesn't listen to me anymore and it makes me angry, how would you mirror that? She doesn't listen to me anymore and it makes me angry. How would you mirror that?
What are the last 3 words?
Last 1 to 5 words. Take it easy. Let's not get too fancy with this yet. We'll give you time. I heard it over here. Makes you angry. Now, inflect upwards on that. Makes you angry? What is he asking me? Yeah, expand upon that. Now, inflect downward. Makes you angry. What is he telling me with that? I hear you. I get it. I'm picking up what you're laying down. Both of them show that I'm listening. Both of them showing that I'm attending. The inflections encourages them to go on without saying, please go on. And then the downward inflection shows that I'm paying attention.
And Marcella, I know that you mentioned the late night FM DJ voice. Could you go a little bit in depth as to why it's critical for real estate negotiators to set the tone and use the late night FM DJ voice?
Absolutely. So we can impact someone's emotions just by using our tone of voice. And when you lower your diaphragm, slow your cadence, you're bringing your audience into listen to what you're saying, and it calms them down. So if we're talking like this, look, you just need to get this done. Can you just sign here? We have 5 minutes. You're stressing them out. And fear is the number one. It's a negotiation. And Derek, you might correct me on this. I might say this wrong, but fear is the number one driving factor in human decision making. You're applying fear to your clients, but if you slow them down
and give them time to think and give them the information necessary, you're going to relax them and you're going to allow them to reduce the emotions in their head and think clearly so they can make decisions. Now, as a woman, I would be careful though, because you don't want to, we don't want to sound whispery. And so you have to, we also don't want to sound like we're sending the wrong message. We are guiding and we are helping and we're putting them in a frame of mind to help themselves and to empower them during a difficult transaction.
And I want you guys, to pay, go back and listen to this recording when we're done and pay attention to how Marcella responded to Shay's question. You want to know what the late night FM DJ voice sounds like? You want to know what it sounds like specifically coming from a woman? Her response to Shay's question was all in the late night FM DJ voice. So it may have gotten by most of you, but when you go back and listen to the recording, listen to Shay's question and then listen to how Marcella responded if you want to know how that voice is supposed to hit the ear. Sorry, Marcella.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Thank you. And Lori Grenier, actually, from Shark Tank, is phenomenal at this. So if you're watching TV at night and you happen to hear Lori Grenier, take some time and really listen to her because she does a phenomenal job at it. But thank you, Derek.
Delivering syntax, that they're basically the same thing, talking about tone. In terms of a ratio that'll help you appreciate this more, just remember 7:38:55. Maher Arabian started talking about this ratio back in the 60s, early 70s at UCLA. He didn't mean this to be the be-all, end-all for importance of the components of a message. He's just used that as a framework to outline that how you say something is five times more important than what you're actually saying. And so delivery and syntax being so closely related, you're talking about communication. They add up to 93%. 93% of the importance of a message is contained in how it's delivered. And so keep that in mind, your tone of voice. How are you delivering the message? We're going to talk about what tones of voices you should be in during a conversation where you're trying to influence someone else. We have three different negotiator personality types within the Black Swan Method: assertives, analysts, and accommodators. Each of those has a specific voice that they like to use. For the assertive, it's very aggressive. It's almost bully-like in the way that they deliver their message. That is a voice you should never be in if you're in a conversation where you're trying to influence other people. You should be in the accommodator's voice, which is friendly, approachable, amenable. During most of the conversation, when you get to that portion of the conversation where you want to state your goal and objective, draw your line in the sand, make your ask, then you'll switch to the late night FM DJ voice. The late night FM DJ voice is a voice that you use to deliberately slow the other person down. And you exaggerate the pronunciation on every single word when you're trying to drive home your point. What about email? Does email have a tone? Does the actual black letters on a white screen? The question that I have posted on this particular slide, does it have a tone? If I'm sending you an email, if you just got chewed out by your boss and you open my email, that is the emotion that you're going to apply to the email. Tone is so important to other people that they imagine it. Black letters on a white screen in and of themselves don't have a tone. but you better believe that the recipient of your email is going to assign a tone to it. If you and I have a one-on-one relationship and I am your negotiation coach, I'm going to encourage you to stop trying to negotiate via email. You lose way too much data when you're trying to go back and forth. And the other reason it doesn't make sense, it's why would you, it's equivalent to laying out your next 7 anticipated moves if you were playing chess over email. And you put in your email, your next 7 anticipated moves, and you expect the other side to sit there and take it? No, they're not going to. Further, they're going to pick out, when you write one of those voluminous emails, they're going to pick out the 1 or 2 things in that email that they hate. And that's all they're going to fixate on. You may have 10 brilliant points. Point number 11 is the one that they are going to fixate on. And that's all that's going to drive their response. So going forward, your email should be used to drive them to a voice-to-voice conversation for the reasons that I just laid out. You just lose too much. And I'm continually amazed that people are so reluctant to engage the other side voice to voice that they want to do everything by text, everything by email. At the end of the day, the email and the text should be used to drive them to a phone call or to a Zoom call.
And Sandy, what do you have to offer to our ladies in the audience today as far as executing late night FM DJ? What should they be aware of?
Be aware that you're not trying to have that sultry, sexy voice. For women, when you try to use that late night FM DJ voice, it can come across as overly sultry. So you want to make sure that you practice this a little bit. It's easier for the guys because I hate to say that, but it's easier for the guys because they don't have to worry about that so much. But for women, when you try to get that late night FM DJ voice, it can come down low and sultry. So you want to practice just having a calm cadence. It's not about having the low alto voice so much as it is just talking slow and enunciating each one of your words very clearly. If you want an example, watch Shark Tank and listen to Lori Grenier. She's the best at it for females for that late night FM DJ voice.
Now that's perfect. That's exactly right. The late night FM DJ, and as you heard it in Sandy's voice, because she just played a little bit for us, is much more about cadence.
I will start with the assertive voice. I am a natural born assertive. It's fight, flight, make friends. The assertive is the fighter. Flight is the analyst. That would be the second voice. That is closer to what many of you have heard referred to as the late night FM DJ. And it will have an impact on her brain. And then I'll move to the make friends voice, the accommodator's voice, the friendly smiling voice. The proposition, the hypothesis that we put in front of you guys is that the neuroscience rules are always rules. It has the same type of impact on every single person. The degree of impact varies, but the type of impact is always the same. So it asks you to listen for the three voices and see what kind of an impact it has. The first voice will make them combative, the second voice will slow their brain down, and the third voice will pick their brain right back up. I'm a bank robber, bad guy trapped in a bank. You're a hostage negotiator. You don't know how many bad guy bank robbers there are. You don't know how many hostages we have. All you know is that it's your job to talk me out. You and your law enforcement colleagues have the bank surrounded. You have 4 things you cannot agree to, yeah. 4 things you cannot do. You can't give me any weapons. You can't give me any transportation. You can't give me any drugs or alcohol. And you can't do a hostage exchange of any kind. People are not allowed to come in at all. People only come out. You know, in the movies, Eddie Murphy says, "If I come in, you let some people go." You know, you're not going to do that.
Right. Got it.
We will simulate being over the phone, and then we'll start. Questions?
So that makes sense.
Okay.
As far as I can take as much drugs and alcohol as I want.
You're going to have to pass the test later, probably. Okay. But.
No, I think that makes sense.
All right, well,
I'm ready to get crushed, but
you're ready to rock.
Yeah.
Okay, say ring, ring.
Okay. Ring, ring.
I need a car in 60 seconds or she dies.
I'm sorry, I won't be able to do that for you.
You want me to kill her right now? I'll kill her right now. I got a lot of hostages. I can throw one out every minute. You got 55 seconds.
How many hostages do you have in the bank?
Enough to go all day. 55 seconds.
And what's your name again?
I have no intention of telling you that. Are you an idiot? You've got 50 seconds.
Where? How are you going to do it? You're just going to throw her out the door?
I'm going to put the gun to her head. I'm going to walk her to the front door. I'm going to cock the trigger so everybody sees that she's about to lose her life. And then I'm going to blow her brains all over the street. Is that specific enough for you? You got 50 seconds.
You know we've got the whole bank surrounded, so if you get too close to the
door, that's news to me?
Are you in danger?
45 seconds.
Too close to the door? We might be able to pull off a shot. I think you might want to be a little
40 seconds.
About that. What'd you do this morning?
You have 40 seconds left in this hostage's life.
Yeah. So how'd you get into the bank this morning?
How do you think?
Just walked right in and just raised the gun and told everybody to go to the back or go to the front? Where'd you put everybody? Just like make sure that they're secure.
Something like that.
Who else is in the bank with you? Or did you come in alone?
35 seconds.
I'm glad your watch is working. Anybody else
is
in there?
Yours?
How did you pick this person to be number one? Or just a random choice because they're all equal to you?
Random choice.
Yeah. What do you think about the bank right now? Is everyone?
I think I got 30 seconds before there's one less person in this bank. At least.
Why'd you pick this bank?
It was in a way. 30 seconds.
It's a very small bank.
27 seconds.
What else we got going on? What else? So what else is going on in
well, in 25 seconds, what else is going on is either I'm leaving or a hostage is dead.
Yeah. Do you think you're leaving?
Sorry, one way or another, I'm leaving. You got 20 seconds.
Yeah. How might you go about leaving?
What part of I need a car do you not understand?
Well, how are you going to get to the car?
You've got 20 seconds. I'm going to walk out the front door. You're going to get out of the way. I'm going to leave.
Are you going to step over the dead body to get to the car?
Yeah. Well, what it if sounds it's all to me like there's going to be at least one, because you got 15 seconds left for this hostage's life. Then we might stack them up.
Seems like you're going to have a pile of bodies.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
And then the car is not going to be able to go anywhere.
Yeah, I think so.
How do you think you're gonna make it over the pile of bodies without getting shot before you get into the car?
We'll stop there. Thank you for volunteering.
Eric, same question, man. What would you do different? Hindsight's 2020. What were you trying to accomplish that you didn't get to?
So I thought leading out of it, there was the whole introduction part. It was the first thing that popped into my head after it was over.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, didn't do that. Didn't say, like, in the book was like, you know, hi, it's Brandon, you're talking to me now.
Yeah.
And so that whole exchange of setting it, which was the punch in the face, maybe, that I just completely forgot about doing that.
Yeah.
So I wish I had done that. I think part of it was those initial kind of big, it seems like mirroring some stuff and doing those questions of, it seems like you have a plan here. Tell me more about how you plan on this implementation process.
That's interesting, and that actually answers some of our questions that have come in the room today. And he said, seems like you have a plan here. And then what was your follow-up to that?
What do you think this implementation process is going to be?
What does this look like, right? It seems like you got a plan here. How does this thing play out? That's really interesting. Okay, well, good. I like your assessment of yourself. So out the gate, I need a car in 60 seconds. You apologized. And he said, I'm sorry. We're not going to be able to do that. I love that for several reasons. One, because right out the gate, you wanted to let this guy know, like, you can trust me. Anything that I say, you can take it to the bank and cash it in. I'm going to be honest with you. And then also that little part of I'm sorry, it's a great way to drop in a little dusting of empathy right before you drop a bomb on them. And so I kind of like that 1-2 combo. Like, I'm sorry. We're not going to be able to do that. At the very least, he might not be happy, but he knows he can probably trust what you have to say. And so you're setting that premise early on. And then your very next question is, how many hostages do you have? And I mean, so you tried to address the demand a little bit, and then you jumped right into information gathering, starting with what we talked about in the hallway. This is what you don't know. You weren't wasting any time getting into it. He didn't give you much. I got to admit, I was a little disappointed on his response to that. Because I was like, that's a good question, man. Come on, give the guy a reward. But still, good question. And then you followed that with, what's your name again? Do you remember that moment? Like, what were you thinking? What were you trying to do? You know, I'm sorry we can't do that. How many hostages do you have? What's your name again? Where were you going with that? Do you remember?
Not particularly.
Okay.
I think part of it was I was trying to get him to give me some piece of information about himself.
Okay.
Which I think was leading into, you know, what'd you do this morning? How'd you get in this morning? That kind of stuff.
All right. Yeah.
But,
well,
that was the intent, but I think.
Good. Yeah, exactly. The intent was really good, right?
The outright asking of it just gave him the opportunity to say, no, I'm not telling you my freaking name.
Yeah. Well, you already know how you would change it. And that's exactly what I would suggest. If that's where you were trying to go with that, trying to drop in this, like, I think you might have told me your name, but I don't remember if you told me your name, so what's your name again? Right? You know, like, I definitely would have changed that, and you would have said either one of those two things. I think that's a good alternative. Let's see, where'd you go from here? How are you going to do it? Are you just going to take a couple people out? I didn't get all the words down, but again, implementation focus there. How's this going to look? How are you going to do it when you come out? How many people are going to be coming out with you? And then you dropped in, I really like this question, except for the fact that it's probably a yes question, but you asked him, are you in danger? I thought that was really good. I mean, I really did, because it's like you're trying to create an element of trust, and if, like, there are things that you're afraid of that are really going to cause harm to you, I'm someone you can talk to about those things. And so I probably would have changed this so that the answer would have been some sort of a no. But again, the intent was really on point. How'd you get into the bank this morning? Really good question. Who else is in the bank with you? Did you come alone? Right? So there's personalization, there's information gathering, right? A little wordsmith in there. But I like, again, the intent, and also this whole, like, who are the people, who's inside? Something these guys found out in crisis negotiation. If they could get the hostage taker to use the name of the hostage or hostages, the chances of them hurting that person dropped by like 800%. And that was kind of where you were going. Like, all right, well, I can't be personalized here. He thinks I'm an asshole. Maybe I can personalize the hostages. And so I like that. I like that kind of last-ditch effort. Got to the end. You know, why'd you pick this bank? What else is going on? How are we going to get to the car? I mean, you really just, you tried to pepper him with as many calibrated questions as you could think of. And I think there's probably a little wordsmithing you do here and there. But again, intention was good, and you're almost never going to go wrong using a skill. And so your total time, you went for 2 minutes and 52 seconds. So nice job there.